Hello, thank you for joining us for another session of Dedication Fans Remember the Bay City Rollers, hosted by Bay City Rollers Fan Events. I'm Suze and co-hosting is Laura. Hello, Laura.
Hey, Suze, good to hear your voice.
You too. This week, we are very excited and happy to have with us Mo Farrington. Mo is the proprietor at Melville Castle in Edinburgh. A little history about the castle before we start. The original tower house was owned by the Melville family before passing to Sir John Ross in the 14th century. It subsequently changed hands with the attached lands several times and was sold to David Rennie in 1705. It then passed to Henry Dundas through his marriage to the daughter of David Rennie, Elizabeth Rennie. The castle was owned by the Dundas family until after the Second World War, when the ninth Lord Melville moved to a smaller house on the estate, and the castle was leased as an army rehabilitation center and then later as a hotel. Lord Melville was David Dundas. Now, what does Melville Castle have to do with the Bay City Rollers, you ask? Well, let's say hello to Mo and let her explain. Hello, Mo. Thank you for talking with us today.
That's okay. It's a pleasure. This is not something I've ever done before, but funnily enough, after I posted the Melville Castle plates to you, I also posted one to Karen and one to Eric.
Oh, my.
I thought they should have some, but I do have some left. If anybody wants to buy one, that's fine. I have a few. But Melville Castle and the Bay City Rollers, how it actually happened, I haven't the faintest idea. Possibly because Stuart, as in Woody, lived up in Fairmile Head, which is about 5 miles up the road. Maybe they'd heard of it from there. But anyway, they decided to give it a whirl. The fact that they decided to do that at 11 o'clock at night on a winter's night, I think it was in December, fine. They knocked on the door, I answered it, took one look at them and thought, who the hell are they? I mean, I'd never seen such a strange bunch of young men in my life. And I think it was Eric that said, we're looking for some rooms for the night. And I welcomed them in. I was actually just about to leave with some of the staff because Melville Castle sits in a valley. It's called the Esk Valley.
Okay.
And if you want staff, you have to go and get them at the top of the road when they get off the bus. And at night time, there are no buses, so you have to take them home. And so that was what I was about to do when these guys turned up in this scruffy old blue van. And so that was the start of the story. I didn't know who they were until one of the girls, her name was Lorraine Fraser, got very excited. She knew who they were, and she's bouncing up and down trying to tell me, and I'm saying, be quiet, let me get on with this. So once I deposited the boys up in the West Wing, I just left them to it. I don't know if they realised they'd been left all alone in the castle, but they had. And I took all the staff home, and I didn't see them again until the next morning.
Oh, wow. So 11 o'clock at night, five boys are at their front door looking for lodgings.
Yeah, five scruffy boys of an age group that you would think, I'm not very sure about this. But anyway, that's how it started.
And it became like a retreat for them, didn't it? Because people didn't really know about it.
Well, it did. You see, nobody ever gave them away. And I think that's probably the best part of the story, the fact that they were so famous at that time, and my staff were all got together for a staff meeting, and I said, right, guys, this is going to go one of two ways. And I'm telling you now, if any one of you gives them away, you're fired.
Mm. Oh, wow.
That was the rule. They have found this place, they need somewhere to just be themselves and just wander around just like anybody else, and they need the protection, and it's our job to protect them and make sure that nobody ever finds them here, and nobody ever did.
Mm. Oh, that's amazing.
It wasn't until you lot all started talking about it. It's been a secret all these years.
Wow.
Yeah, a very well kept secret.
Yeah, that would not happen today with Twitter and social media. That would not happen today, I don't think.
I think it would. The only thing that ever happened was Lorraine Fraser, the same girl, one day I caught her parading around on the lawn, getting her photograph taken, wearing one of the boys' suits. I don't know which one it was. And I said to her, I'm telling you, you're on thin ice here. Get the suit off, get it back to wherever you found it, and don't do that again. And she never did. As of today, you know, if that had happened today, all mobile phones would have been banned, etc., etc. I would have done everything I could. In my job today, I meet a lot of very famous people, but you'll never know who they are because I won't tell you.
Yeah. Discretion, it's that's a fine thing. It's a rare fine thing, isn't it, these days?
Well, what is it they say? Loyalty is the measure of true friendship.
Absolutely.
And the boys always knew that. I mean, I never even had my photograph taken with them.
Wow.
Because I felt that it was the wrong thing to do. And I was looking through this album you sent me.
Mm.
And there's a picture there of Fritjof and my back. I'm wearing a blue jacket with a furry collar. That's the only picture that ever features me at all.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, wow.
Mm.
Yep, never had it done, didn't do it, didn't think it was the right thing to do. And but I'm looking at these pictures here, and they're absolutely super pictures. The carriages, they all came from Norway, and they were known as landaus. And the horses that were featured were Fritjof, the foal, who is Tysa. They're also standing in front of Mary Queen of Scots' Spanish chestnut tree.
Oh,
which is down near Lord Melville's house. Mm. And then they're in the rest of the pictures are taken in the stable courtyard. Alan, as you can see, is very, very comfortable with the horse. The others not quite so, because he was a farmer. He's very relaxed with the horse.
Yeah.
And they are super duper photographs. I think it was one of the few times that Leslie was actually there. The rest of the time he was not.
Why is that?
Because I kicked him out.
Yeah.
Being rude. I kicked him out for being unruly, rude, difficult, and not behaving himself properly. So he got kicked out.
Really? Even back then?
Back then.
Wow.
I wasn't prepared to put up with it. And I think secretly the boys were quite pleased as well.
That's very interesting. He was a naughty boy for sure, even back then.
He was just, he was a bit of a show-off, and because he was famous now, he thought he could just do what he likes, as some famous people do, and I was for telling him, well, you're in my place, my house, my rules, piss off.
Mm. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
Do you have any stories that stand out? Fun stories?
Well, we used to go around the back and shoot rats, river rats.
Oh.
4 o'clock in the afternoon, it was usually Eric and me, sometimes Stuart, and we, right down by the river, we had a big stone fire thing that we'd built for burning trash, as you would put it, and around about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the rats would come up from the riverbank. All rivers have rats, and they would come along to see if there was some nice tasty morsel for them to eat, maybe a bit of haggis left over or something like that. Anyway, and so we would just stand and wait, and then they would jump up onto the top of the bricks and we would shoot them and they would just fall in the fire. And they thought that was great fun, and it was quite good fun. And so we would do that. Other things, I gave them the house at the top of the drive. There's a we call them gatehouses to mm-hmm. big estates,
mm-hmm.
and they were looking for somewhere to practice, and because there were other guests in the hotel, that wasn't going to work. So what we did was we gave them the house at the top of the drive, which I lived in at that point. I moved out and went down to the hotel, gave them the gatehouse so that they could set up all their equipment and practice in there, and nobody knew that they were there.
Oh, wow, that's perfect.
Yeah, they could make as much noise as they liked.
Yeah, not disturb anyone.
That's awesome.
Well, you did tell us in our pre-interview about some Norwegian teenage girls who were in Edinburgh for the tattoo.
Well, every Norwegian school has a children's orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was from Bergen. They were sent over to the Edinburgh Tattoo. Well, we'd housed a Norwegian children's orchestra before, and they varied from about maybe 12, 13 years old to maybe about 16, 17. And there could be as many as 50, 60 of them.
Mm.
So the Rollers were number one in Norway at that time, and we had to really think it through. So what we did was we cordoned off the West Wing, which had five bedrooms in it. Well, that was fine.
Yeah.
And it also had a back staircase which would travel right up and down the whole building, so they could actually go all the way up to the roof if they wanted, or they could go all the way down into the basement, down through the dungeons, along the corridors, past the wine cellars, up into the kitchens and out the back door.
Without ever being seen?
Pardon?
Without ever being seen, you mean?
No, nobody would see them.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Just us. And they could come down to the kitchen if they were hungry, and they would stand and talk to the chef through the hatch and tell them what they wanted, and they would sit in the big kitchen. We had a huge big kitchen table, and they could sit there and eat, and nobody bothered with them, and they didn't bother. They were quite at home. They felt very much at home.
Oh, that's so nice.
And so they would do that, and they could hear the orchestra practicing in the great big drawing room on the first floor, but the girls didn't know they were there. So this went on for about a week, I think. And I said to the boys, hey, listen, this has been such fun for you and for the girls. How about we give them a farewell? So we organized what we were going to do. And they said, yeah, that's no bother. And so I got on the bus and snuck and ask. So it's not a problem for me. So I announced to the girls that because they'd been so well behaved and we'd had such fun with them, we had an extra super duper surprise for them. But as it will become obvious, we're going to have to lock the bus door. And I asked the driver if he would do a sort of circular tour in slow motion so that all the girls with their cameras could take pictures of what I was about to show them. So once that was all organized, then I went into the hallway and I gave them a shout and I said, right, you're on, boys. So we all walked out the front door. Well, I tell you, I thought the bus was going to go over on its side.
Oh, God.
Such excitement. They went wild. They were taking pictures and banging on the windows. And, I mean, the boys knew they were locked in the bus, so they knew that they couldn't come out and bite them.
Right.
So they were putting their hands on the windows, and the kids had their hands on the other side of the windows, and that was the closest they would get to touching a Bay City Roller alive.
And wetting themselves.
You know, they didn't rush. Nobody rushed them away or anything. They were there for, I would say, a good half hour.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, I love that.
They were great with their time, and they stood and they let them take pictures, and the bus turned round, and then the other ones got forward and they took pictures.
Oh my God.
Until eventually the boy said, right, is that it? I said, yep, that's it. So we gave them a big wave and we all went back into the castle, and I think it was Stuart said, well, that was a gas, wasn't it? I said, yeah, it was.
I love that.
It must have been sweet torture for the girls.
Absolutely. I mean, personally, I didn't see what they were getting so excited about. But of course, I was in constant contact with them all day, every day. And so, you know, and then Stuart's mum and dad would come down. And eventually we did Stuart's mum and dad's, I think it was their 25th wedding anniversary dinner at the castle with Stuart's brother and the whole family. And that was a lovely thing to do
as well.
That does sound wonderful. Well, I used to go up to Joan and John's quite often because Stuart was looking for, now I had a, I don't quite remember how I had it, but I had a 12-string guitar, and Stuart said, can I have that? And I said, yeah, I'll just do you a swap. So I got his 6-string and he got my 12-string. Don't ask me why I had a guitar because I couldn't play it. Anyway, and I used to go up to the house and sit and drink tea with Joan and John. And if they were doing a concert, they did a concert. Now, where was it? It was the Odeon in Edinburgh. And they did this concert. And we knew the song list and everything. And so I went up and picked up Joan and John and his little brother. And we went up to the Odeon. And we couldn't hear a thing.
Oh, yes.
I don't know why they're bothering singing, because you can't hear them.
Not a word.
Anyway, we left 5 minutes before they were due to play their last song, and we came down from the circle in the Odeon down the stairs into this foyer, and all these bodies were lying all over the place with St. John's Ambulance Corps people dealing with all these females that had fainted. I mean, really?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we stepped over all these bodies, and I looked at Joan and I said, "You realise your son's responsible for this?" She said, "Who would have thought, as a wee laddie growing up, that this would have happened?" I said, "Well, quite." But anyway,
oh, I love that story.
Absolutely, it was lovely, and you know, I met them a couple of times when I was out at Tam Peyton's house. I didn't care much for him actually, but anyway, I went out there a few times because that was out at Rathall, there was some big dogs out there, and then they bought this place out. We call it the Lang Wang, which means a long road, and there's a road from Edinburgh that stretches out, heading for Carluke and Carnwarth and Lanark. And the boys bought this farmhouse out there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the idea was to practice and to write songs and all that sort of thing. I don't think they had it that long, but it was right out in the back of beyond. And unless you knew they were there, you didn't know they were there.
Mm.
But we didn't, I don't think it was as successful for them, a venue, because it was a bit of a trail to go out there.
Is that the one that burned down at some point? Something happened and there was a fire?
Don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know, honey.
Well, it's good that, you know, you stayed in touch with them after all these years. Well, obviously not less. But
not less. No, we didn't stay in touch as such all these years. How that happened was Eric would send me postcards from all over the place, and I think they've got them on the site, because I sent, I had them all in the yearbook, so I sent them off to Karen.
Yeah, we have those.
But what happened was that I have a practice. I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, and I have a practice in Bridge of Weir. And I noticed in the local magazine that someone called Eric Faulkner was playing in the Kilbarkin Community Hall, something like that. And I thought, that can't be right. So anyway, I thought, no, I've got to go. So, because I live on the Ayrshire coast, so I thought, no, I've got to go. So I walked in that night, and there was this girl who I now know as Karen, sitting at the front desk, and I bought my ticket, and I said, is Eric here by any chance? And she said, yes, he's getting ready through the back there. I said, well, we go way back, I really would quite like to say hello to him for old time's sake. And she said, oh, well, I don't know about that. And I said, well, if you could go through and tell him that Mo is here and see what happens. I said, I haven't seen him for, 20, 25 years, because I didn't know where he was. She went, right, okay. So I just stood there, and she walked through, and she obviously said it, and the next thing I heard this screech. You mean wee Mo, little Mo, really? And he comes bouncing out, takes one look at me, grabs me and goes, where have you been? I said, I could say the same thing for you. So Karen said, you really do know him, don't you? And I said, well, yes. She said, I get it all the time, but this is quite unusual. So I was in the concert, and it was wonderful to just sit there and listen to him doing what I call Eric Faulkner Unplugged.
Absolutely,
It was very, very good. It was great to reconnect with him, and we did get some, which was really, really nice. He hasn't changed a bit.
I love hearing that.
I haven't seen Stuart face-to-face. I've communicated with Stuart and his lovely wife. Elvis the dog is just such a poppet.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful dog.
I love dogs, and that is a beautiful dog.
Gorgeous.
So I haven't actually seen Stuart, But he knows I'm there, and so does his wife, because she's a David Bowie fan, so why she married a Bay City Roller, I'm not quite sure.
They both married models, so that there's a connection.
Say that again?
They both married models. She was a model, and David Bowie's wife was a model, so maybe there's a connection.
Absolutely. What a beautiful woman she is.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. But, and it was sad to see Alan pass away like that, and I haven't seen Derek at all. But see, when they stayed with me, they were, apart from Leslie, they were very down to earth, very normal, everyday boys who just wanted to play their music and write their songs. There was never any scandal, there was never any swift, there was never anything untoward. Mm. There was never, ever anything. And you know, we would open the papers at breakfast, because sometimes they would come down and sit in our breakfast with me, and we'd be sitting there reading all about the Bay City Rollers Hotel has been besieged by screaming girls at 2 o'clock in the morning, which was complete rubbish, because they were all fast asleep in their beds, and I was fast asleep in my bed. The alarms were on, and there was nothing happening.
That PR machine never stopped, though, did it?
Well, I think that was Tam Peyton, yeah, just keeping things ramped up.
Of course it was.
Potato merchant that he is, maybe he was trying to sell some extra chips.
Well, it's so nice to hear that they did have some peace and respite from all that noise, you know? They needed about 10 of you to take care of them, Mo.
Pardon me?
They needed about 10 of you to take good care of them the way you did.
Well, no, I mean, you could put them in the back seat of the car, stick a blanket over the top of them, drive them through the gates of the airport straight to the plane, drive back out again. Nobody knew they were there. Everybody's standing out front waiting. Nothing's happening. They're on the plane. I'm on my way back down to the castle. Mm. We treated it all very matter of fact, and we made it as easy and as peaceful as possible, and it was a pleasure to be able to do that for them at the time. It really was.
Well, we thank you. Thank you, thank you for that. you're talking about the photos that I sent you. They're from the archives of Danny Fields, who worked for 16 Magazine, a teenage magazine.
Right, I remember him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I want to know more about the horses. what kind of horses are they?
Uh-oh.
I know, I'm going there.
Uh-oh.
I'm going there.
Well, somebody, an American,
of course,
asked me that question once, and this is how I answered them. There were two ladies, and they said to me, what is the main peculiarity of that breed? And I'm one of these funny people that if you say something really stupid to me, boy, are you going to get it. And she got it. Because I said to her, well, I said, you know, they are Norwegian Furings from the mountains of Rosendal in Norway, which is true. And the little bitty baby isn't. Because the main peculiarity of this breed is the younger they are, the taller they are. The older they are, the smaller they are. You know, like when people get old, they get grey and they get stooped and they get small and they get frail. She said, yeah. And I said, well, that's what these horses do. So the little bitty baby that you're talking about is actually the oldest one, and her name is Tysa, which means tossing your head. And the biggest one at the moment, which is Fritjof, which is probably Frank or that kind of name, is youngest. And she went back to America and told the American Equestrian Federation this, and they sent a letter to me to get that verified. So I had to come clean and explain what I'd done. And they were so tickle pink with it, they wanted to print the story in the American Equestrian Federation magazine, and they did. it could have backfired on me, but it didn't. And then that same week, we also had another two. They were from Arkansas, and I met them in the morning. They were going up the stairs, and I just happened to say, are you in for dinner? And he said, well, we would like to be in for dinner, but we want haggis, and this is our last night, so we're going to Edinburgh to try and find haggis. And I went, I'll get you haggis if you're in for dinner and you want haggis. So they said, oh, well, that's fine, that saves us a trip. So I booked them in for 7 o'clock. Meanwhile, I went through the kitchen and I said to Grace, haggis. She said, aye, what of it? I said, have we got any? She says, no. I said, right. So I went up to the butcher in Bonnyrigg, got a haggis, came back and said to her, how do I cook this? She said, put it in a pot of water and just leave it and it'll cook. So I said, right, okay. So I did that because I was on that night. So about 7 o'clock, Meeta comes through the kitchen and she says, boss, are we doing haggis tonight? And I went, oh my God, forgot about the haggis.
Oh no.
I said, where are they? She said, they're in the dining room. I said, stall them. They're Americans. Give them iced water, give them bread, give them anything, but stall them. So I went and took the pot lid off and it had burst.
Oh no.
Oh my God, no. So I said, right, okay. So I poured the whole thing through a sieve. And I put it in a big pan and I started pushing it backwards and forwards and trying to dry it out. And I'm ladling cayenne pepper, black pepper, you name it, on it. And it, eventually I got it and I thought, right, that's going to have to do. Then I got the turnips, that we call them neeps.
Right.
And it's like a root vegetable and the potato and everything. Got it all on the silver and everything. So I said to Meeta, right, this is what I want you to do. So I told her and she said, boss, I love you and I'd do anything for you, but I won't do that. I said, this is not meatloaf.
No.
I said, right, get me a clean jacket, I'll go and do it myself. So I went down and there I am with the silver and everything. And I'm serving it up. And this woman says, what is that? And I said, you don't want to know about that, madam, just now. I do. I said, no, you don't. She said, yes, I do. I said, really, you don't. You just want to eat your haggis and well, I'll tell you about it later. Well, I'll hold you with that. And I said, okay. So they had their dinner. So Meeta comes up about, oh, I don't know, 9:30 and says, Mo, what about these people in the restaurant? I said, what people? She said, the haggis people. I went, oh my God, are they still there? She said, yeah, they're waiting for you. Oh, you're right. So down I go and I said, well, I promised I would come back down. I really don't want to tell you this story. It's under duress. You'll get upset and I don't want to upset you. No, 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 we want to know what that is. I said, right, okay. In Scotland, we have haggis. We have to go shoot them fresh, lobsters. We have to go shoot them. We stun them. We cook them. We chop the legs off to stop them running away. We, all that sort of thing. And so I did. I went and I shot haggis and I got it all prepared and everything and I cooked it. But I didn't know I'd shot a pregnant haggis. Well, one of them started howling. She really did. Meeta just looked at me and said, get the lady a brandy, will you? So I said, look, it's okay. She said, no, it's not okay. It's not okay. We've killed the mother. And I went, I thought, oh, for God's sake. So we're busy trying to calm the situation down. And I said, look, you'll need to go up to the restaurant. But I said, I'm so sorry, because this little thing that she's looking at on the presentation was the little bitty baby.
Jesus.
So and I'm thinking, oh my God. So eventually they went up to the library. I went and got changed into my manager's uniform, which is a completely different ball game. And so I walked in and I sat down and I said, look, I am so sorry about this. And I'm thinking, God, how am I going to? She said, we've been talking. I said, right, okay. She said, do you have a freezer? And I said, yes, we do. Well, we're leaving tomorrow. I said, yes, I know. We're flying direct, right? We want to take the baby with us and bury it and give it a proper funeral in our garden.
Oh, no.
I went, well, in that case, I'm going to need your passports. I'm going to need to prepare bills of lading. I need export documents. I just reeled the whole thing off. But leave that to me. By way of apology, I will do all that. So they went, right, fine. So first of all, I had to find, we have little wooden chocolate boxes over here for Swiss chocolates.
Okay.
So, I got a little wooden box and I put the little baby haggis in. I mean, it's only the size of a small plum. It's what it actually is. It's the whole thing shrunken right down after it burst. That's what it is. It's stomach lining. So it's just round and it looks like a small pear. So I put that in and I tapped it all down and then I put it in the freezer, and I prepared bills of lading and notices, Pagas in transit, customs documents, you name it. I prepared it, the whole lot, and gave it to them the next morning just as they were leaving. And they flew it to America, and they did do the funeral with local friends of theirs and sent me photographs, and they prepared a very nice grave and all that stuff for this Scottish haggis that was inadvertently killed by this lunatic in a hotel just to provide them with dinner.
Mo.
You, I love your level of commitment.
I mean, yeah, you didn't double down, you trebled down. I mean, that was amazing.
Yeah. we always did, because, I mean, until a nice lady explained to me, she said, you know, Mo, I know that you take the mickey out of all these Americans. And I said, well, it's my amusement. And she said, but you've got to understand that, you know, they're walking around in a building that existed long before America was even thought of. I said, well, when you put it in from that point of view, it's fairly obvious that I'll tone it down a bit. So the next one who checked in, we had these big comforters on the bed, and this guy phones me down and he said, I figured out how to get into this pillowcase thing, but there's nowhere for my head to go. And I said, right, well, you're not supposed to sleep in it, you're supposed to sleep under it.
Oh no, the duvet.
Oh, right.
Oh no.
We don't have them in America. I said, not yet, you don't, but you will get them in America eventually.
Oh my
but,
goodness.
But I mean, I can actually sit here and tell you stories all day, but I'm sure you don't want that. But yeah, so the castle is, we sold it in 1984. I retired from that and went on to do other things, and as you know, I'm a hypnotherapist.
Mm.
So the castle had a time of dereliction, and it had to be rebuilt again, and I don't know exactly what the situation with it is just now. I mean, if I'd known all you guys were going to actually be in it, I would have come along, but I didn't know that.
Right.
So the next time you all decide to go and visit Melville Castle, I'll make a point of coming and meeting with you all there. It's changed a bit, but it's not changed that much. I mean, you can't change a hanging staircase. That staircase is very rare. There's only, I think, three in Britain.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
It's a hanging staircase. There's no visible means of support.
Wow.
And that makes it quite unique.
Yeah.
So, and the fireplaces were from Whitehall Palace in London. You know, there's a lot of history, and there's monk's tunnels on the River Esk that go flowing down, and we found what are called ice houses in the grounds. I found it by accident. My dog found one. And these are upside down beehives, which is where in the 17th century they stored all their meat between ice and straw. And it was so cold, it acted like a freezer.
Oh, wow.
Not a very big freezer, but a freezer nonetheless.
Yeah. No, we definitely have it on our list to come visit next time we're over. Definitely.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Oh, you know what we need to talk about is Stuart and his music for Rosalind Chapel. That was a great story, Mo.
Well, my friend Valerie, who was in the judicial system in the United States before she retired, she decided to come over. I had met her accidentally at my therapy center one day when I had my little dog out for a walk, who was called Dexter Farrington. And Dexter Farrington was the size of a small cat. He was just what we call a teacup Yorkshire Terrier.
Oh, yeah.
I came out the door, and this American voice said, hey, that's a cute dog. And I turned around, and it was Valerie, and we got talking, and I gave her a cup of tea and so on and so forth. And she said, you're the nicest person I've met since I got here. I said, well, that's great. Can I write to you? And I said, feel free. So she did, and she is still writing to me practically every other day. And she lives in California. And I can tell you exactly where she lives. It's Fremont. Fremont in California is where she is. And she came over, and I was taking her around Edinburgh, and I said, I think I'm going to take you to Rosalind Chapel. I said, you've heard of the Da Vinci Code? She said, sure. And I said, well, that played a part in the Da Vinci Code. So off we went. And we went round all over the place. And then, of course, you end up in the tourist shop. Was music. And I'm looking at it. I'm the person that looks at the back. I look at the credits. I'm the one that watches the movie to the very end till you find out who the director was, who did the stage props, who did all the costumes, and who did the music. Mm. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, Stuart Wood. Yep. This sounds like too much of a coincidence to me. So I bought it. Now, I run a radio show, which at the moment is off air because of this pandemic, because it's run from Ayr Hospital. And I'm one of the broadcasters and I'm on the committee for this radio show. And it broadcasts worldwide. And I play the Rollers from time to time, and I play Stuart's music from Roslyn Chapel a lot. Because okay. It is so beautiful. Now, it's on its way to you.
Yes, actually, it arrived yesterday. Thank you very much, in beautiful condition.
That's
okay. Mo is kind it's enough my, to... It's your copy that you're allowing us to use
that's
for...
That's my copy. That's the only copy I have, and you can't get it anymore.
That's right.
Yes, because we tried.
Yeah.
I contacted Melville Castle to see if we could possibly buy a few copies. And whoever I contacted was lovely. And unfortunately, they don't sell the CD anymore. And I've been looking around online for it.
Yeah, we have some feelers out to try to get some copies.
Melville Castle, it was Roslyn Chapel. Yes, Roslyn Chapel. So you can do with mine what you want, but I want a copy.
Okay, thank you very, very much.
Please, if you can you organize that?
Absolutely.
Yes, and, thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
But the music is absolutely beautiful, and that was when I got in touch with Stuart's wife and said, is it possible that you and Stuart were responsible for, and she said, yes, it was, well spotted.
That's wonderful.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because it's absolutely fabulous. I can't wait to hear it. I play it all the time. Well, I did until I gave it to you.
Yeah, and the fans are going to go crazy if they have a chance to get a copy of this. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And you also, we started in the beginning, you were talking about the plates that you sent us of the castle. Can you tell us about that and how you generously donated them for us to do something with?
Right, these are collector's items. They are very valuable. They're about, I would say, between $100 and $150 a piece.
Wow.
The managing director of Royal Copenhagen was staying with us, and we were outside chatting away this particular morning after breakfast, and I said, it would be so lovely to put Melville Castle on a Copenhagen plate. And he said, it's never been done before. There is no such thing as a Scottish castle on a Copenhagen plate. And I said, just because it's never been done before doesn't mean to say that it can't be. And considering there's a Norwegian flag on the roof of this castle, that's maybe quite a good reason.
Yes.
He said, leave it with me. And I told my father about it at the time, and he said, I don't think so. And I said, I just thought it was a nice idea. And about a month later, I got this box with Fragile all over it, like you did. And it was a blank Copenhagen plate with an artistic pen drawing of what it would look like. What did I think of that? And I went, wow. Well, at that time, we owned a big department store. We had a chain of them where we sold Norwegian, Swedish, and Danish things. And we thought, right, okay, so you have to buy a minimum of, I think a minimum of about 500 plates. But we figured we could shift them, and we did.
Mm.
And so they did it. And it's the first time there are no Scottish castles except that one on a Copenhagen plate, which makes it very, very special. So, you know, when I was talking to you about it, I thought, what a good idea for you to be able to do something with it. And then at the same time, I thought, I really feel for all the work that she's done, as in Karen, she deserves one, and definitely Eric should have one because it played a part in his life. And so I signed it on the back for him.
Aww.
Oh, that's so lovely.
And I opened it up, and they're absolutely beautiful. I can't wait to take a nice photo and show everyone and tell them how they can get one of their very own. They're really, really beautiful.
They are.
And
so what is it you've kind of got in mind?
Well, we have an event that we hope we're going to be doing next year. Fans are going to be marching in the Tartan Day Parade in New York City if this whole mess goes away. And, you know, most of Scotland comes over every year in April for it's Tartan Week. And there's this massive, you know, events going on all over the city. And on the Saturday, they have the parade and all the clans march. And so we were going to be our own little clan, and we were going to march under Alan had they made a tartan for Alan after he passed, the proud son
That's
of Edinburgh.
Right.
And it's a beautiful, purple, gorgeous tartan.
Yes,
so we're going to... You have seen it?
Yes, I've seen it.
It's gorgeous. So we're going to march under that. We have, you know, banners being made and flags being made, uniforms that we're going to wear, you know, to represent Alan. So it's in honor of him, in memory of him, and a chance for all of us to get together. And we have people who are, you know, coming from all over the world if we can travel again. So fingers crossed for that. So we're, you know, raising money for that because we want to fly some people over, some special guests. And, you know, we need to have the banners made and, you know, the uniforms made. So it will help with that if that's okay with you.
I think that the pandemic has certainly made everybody fairly inventive.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you need to consider the lilies in the field effect, where that basically what that means is it ain't over till it's over, and it certainly isn't over. So it makes people a little bit reluctant to do things like fly
sure.
and be a part of large groups.
Sure.
Yes. Whether or not 2021 is too soon for that, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
that's a very good question. We
you know.
Right, and
it's you could use one for an online something, and you could keep the other one for whatever it is you're going to do live. I don't know,
yeah.
But you know, I've got about 10 left that somebody can buy if they want to.
Okay, we can put them in touch with you with that, couldn't we?
You certainly could.
Mm. Yeah, no, we're hoping that you know. Things get
it's
better.
It's difficult because you don't want to put anybody at risk, and I know that you're having a really hard time in America with it.
We are.
Scotland, we're doing quite well because our Prime Minister, what do we call her, our First Minister, has been pretty tough. It's not suited everybody, but it's worked.
Yeah.
We, as in myself, I was due to go to the island of Barra this year, but I didn't get to go because the island of Barra managed to stay virus-free and asked everybody not to come, so we didn't.
Sure.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, everything's just uncertain right now.
It's very uncertain, and, we don't know yet when we'll know when we just don't know when it'll be safe to travel again. But, you know, we want to be positive and hopeful but also be cognizant of what's going on. And like you said, we definitely don't want to put anybody at risk or make anyone feel uncomfortable. So we kind of have to wait and see a little bit how things play out.
But, yeah. I think that kind of life really does apply to everybody.
Yes.
And in my job, I'm finding a lot of very stressed people, some people frightened to go out. So, you know, where I would normally see them in the clinic, I have to go to their homes and try and talk some sort of sense into them and say, look, you know, this is going to carry on whether we stay in or whether we don't.
Right.
But don't go and do anything stupid, as Mo is about to sneeze.
Oh,
yeah.
Excuse me.
Bless you, dear girl.
Bless you.
Yeah. Well, we thank you so much for everything, for sitting down with us, for all your generous donations, your time, how you looked after them back in the day. It's just, you're just a wonderful person. We fell instantly in love with you when we first talked to you. We think you're just wonderful, just absolutely wonderful.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as that, but I tell you what, when I'm back on the radio in
in the hospital, you'll be able to phone in and go live on the radio, and we'll maybe do something like an hour's worth of Bay City Roller music, advertise it, you two to phone in on the phone-in line.
Okay.
Do a Bay City Roller show that will go out over the whole world. That might be quite good fun.
Mo, that would be good fun. It's a date. We will be there happily representing the fans proudly. Once Mo is clear to do her radio show again, we will let everyone know where and how they can tune in. A few additional words about this podcast. First of all, Mo is wrong. We would absolutely love to hear her stories all day long. And her American accent? It's pretty spot on. We were blown away by her generosity in the donation of the Melville Castle collector plates for our fundraising. Just really blown away. And we could not believe she sent us her only copy of the Road to Roslyn CD. Her own copy. We want everyone to know that we're going to be sending Mo back her original CD. Due to some decent connections, we were able to acquire a few of these out-of-print CDs. We will be using some for fundraising and maybe even a special giveaway, which you know we like to do from time to time, to thank all of you. Just to be clear, no copies of this out-of-print CD will be made or sold. And as you heard in the podcast, Mo generously donated 2 Melville Castle plates to us. She's also making several more available for purchase outright. If you are interested in purchasing one instead of waiting to try to win one, please reach out to us and we will coordinate that purchase for you. We would again like to thank Mo from the bottom of our hearts. She's such a delightful, spirited, kind woman. It did our hearts good to hear they were so well looked after in her care. And we would have loved to have seen Eric's face when he heard that Mo was there to see his show. Wouldn't you? Thanks to all you, as always, for listening. See you next time. Keep on rolling.